Father's Day was this past weekend. You do anything exciting with your father, Kevin?
I took him out on Saturday morning, the day before Father's Day, because I work on the mornings. He likes to go to breakfast a lot in the morning, so I took him out for breakfast and hung out with his friends.
Gotcha. Well, that's nice. It was a busy weekend for me. My parents, I got to give them a shout-out. Congratulations. They just had their 46th wedding anniversary on the 19th.
Oh, very cool.
And then, of course, the 21st being Father's Day, I actually, my father had been having some problems with his Wi-Fi, so I bought him a new router and hooked him up with that, as well as some Kansas City Chiefs COVID masks.
Very nice. Very nice.
So made it a good Father's Day.
Where'd you get your COVID masks from?
NFL.com.
Nice. Yeah, I ordered some of those a while ago, and I still haven't gotten
them. Yeah, I'm waiting for my pack of the Chiefs masks to come in. I think they're supposed to be in, like, July, you know, of 2021, when maybe COVID will be over.
Yeah, it feels like more 2022 now.
Yeah, exactly. But you know what? We weren't really going to do a culture clash this week. We thought, okay, we got some other stuff in the can. And I said the dreaded words, Kevin. There was no news this week, and then Monday, the world blew up.
Yes, pretty much.
So, without further ado, we got a lot to cover in this episode of Culture Clash, so let's do this thing.
This is the Culture Clash.
Of course, this is Culture Clash number 174 here on the Fandom Podcast Network, and you can find the Fandom Podcast Network on a lot of great places, but it all starts on our homepage at fpnet.podbean.com. Of course, you can also download the Podbean app on your mobile devices. You can also find the Fandom Podcast Network on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. You can also visit our Facebook page where we try to keep you updated with all the great news that's going on in Fandom and throw out some stuff to get some listener interaction as well. So always some fun things there. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram at Fandom Podcast Network and on Twitter at FanPod Network. I'm Kyle. You can find me on Twitter at AKyleW or on Instagram at AKyleFandom. And of course, riding shotgun with me, as always, my co-host and co-founder here on the Fandom Podcast Network, Mr. Kevin Reitzel. Kevin, where can people find you on social media?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Spartan_Phoenix.
And of course, there's two great ways you can support the Fandom Podcast Network and Culture Clash. You can visit TeePublic, teepublic.com, search for the Fandom Podcast Network. You can find the gear of all the great shows here on the Fandom Podcast Network, whether it's t-shirts, hoodies, masks. I got an email, they're doing wallets now, Kevin.
Really? What kind? Like the Velcro kind or leather kind?
I'm going to assume the Velcro material kind. So that's going to be interesting, but all kinds of great stuff. And of course, any proceeds we make from that store go right back into the podcast, as we, you know, podcasting isn't free. And we try to keep the lights on around here in the studio, and we really don't want the power going out in the basement. By the way, did you dust off the Ark of the Antiquities yet?
Nah.
No. No wonder it's kind of glowy. And
I don't know what's down there anymore.
you just took the big Harry Potter bag full of whatever and just threw it down there, didn't you?
I went through my own stuff recently. I was going through a bunch of boxes to try to find some old photographs that I haven't scanned yet. You know, they haven't gone digital. So that's what I did yesterday.
Yeah, I saw you posted a bunch of posters on Facebook.
Yeah. Those were I knew I had some of those cool posters from my Decipher Star Wars and Star Trek and Lord of the Rings CCG days. And I finally found the box that had all of them in there. And some of those are rare, dude.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I had people clamoring for those on the Star Wars CCG page.
Well, yeah, they're going to hunt you down, right? So, but first, they're going to leave us some reviews on Apple Podcasts, iTunes for you Windows user. We love those 5-star reviews. But, you know, we love the reviews in general because, as always, we're striving to make better podcasts to feed your ears. Now, before we get into the news and everything, Kevin, I want to discuss the wonderful miniseries that's been going on Disney Plus, specifically the last episode of The Gallery, which has been covering everything Mandalorian. But I was watching it, and all I could see was a huge smile on your face, because about the first 5 minutes of this show, I was actually expecting to maybe see some video of you on it, because they discussed Willow Hood, Kevin, in detail.
Yes, they did. Yes, they did. Yep.
You must have been loving it.
Yeah, I was. I was really excited about that. They gave a lot of love to Willow Hood, the ice cream maker guy, whom the Camtono idea came from for The Mandalorian, that now that ice cream maker actually has a name and a purpose. The original Willow Hood can be seen during the Empire Strikes Back evacuation of Cloud City for just a second or two. And, of course, has spawned a very cool group called the Willow Hoods that I am part of that take parts of the Willow Hood runs during conventions and, of course, Star Wars celebrations. And the company that I used to work for that made the Star Wars CCG actually named him. And a 501st member, Star Wars Costume Club member from Florida, started the group back in, I want to say, what did Florian say when he was on What a Piece of Junk? I want to say somewhere between 2005 and 8, I think it was. And started the group, and people started showing up dressed up. And then, you know, an actual costume group was born from that. And they gave a lot of love. They showed the run during last year's Chicago run. There was a shot of a bunch of them on the stage, and I don't know if that was Chicago, but I know that I've been on the Star Wars stage a few times. One in, actually, I think twice in UK, one in Germany and London, and then, of course, a few times, here in the States, whether it was Anaheim or Florida. And it was great. They went into detail with that, and I thought that was great because you know, we've been kind of teased a little bit here and there on like the Star Wars show and other stuff like that. And they gave us some love, which was great.
But I got to say, Kevin, this episode of the gallery might have been my favorite of this entire miniseries. And this has been a really great miniseries. But this one, which they called Connections, talked about how they pulled so much from different areas and finding old props and repurposing them. Trying to find things like the E-Web cannon and the troop transport port and all those just cool things. And to finding out that the X-Wing that's down here at Galaxy's Edge was actually the X-Wing cockpit that they used to film the scene from episode 6.
Right. Yeah. The one with Trapper Wolf, where the directors, Dave Filoni. Rick.
Fukihara
and
Deborah Chow.
Deborah Chow did cameos as, and yeah, that was really cool. They were pulling stuff from, you know, the Ewoks, of course, the holiday special to, you know, Return of the Jedi. And so it was great. But, you know, one of the highlights, yes, it was great seeing the Willow Hoods on there, but I really enjoyed the fact that the 501st volunteers who, answered the call to come to a some type of gathering. They had no idea what it was, and they found out that they got on set there in Los Angeles that they were going to be stormtrooper extras for The Mandalorian. And it was great to finally see these guys shine, because they had that one group picture that was released, I think, during Celebration. And then this episode even interviewed many of them. And a lot of them are from my Southern California garrison now, and also up in the Northern garrison. It was just really cool to actually have them named and interviewed and had their TK number. Because when you're in the 501st, you're assigned a TK number. And that's the one that you use and you keep until you retire, I guess. And it was just great to see them do that. And the other cool thing about it was that their own kits that they put together and shaped and made sure that they fit are now screen-used props.
Yeah, that's so awesome. And, you know, it was so cool to hear Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni talk with such reverence for the 501st.
Yes, Yeah, definitely. And we'll wear a hood.
Yeah. I mean, and I think it just goes to show that I think those two are really kind of taking charge of things at Lucasfilm. I did find it funny, too, when he talked about putting in the rifle that the Mandalorian uses, and you see the shot where he's talking to George about it, and he almost seems heartbroken when George says, well, I really didn't come up with that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like... But
yeah, that was the animated one from the holiday special.
Yeah, but this miniseries was so good, and it actually inspired me to do a rewatch of The Mandalorian, just to kind of look for a lot of those little things, and just it gave me a lot of different perspective rewatching it again as well.
Yeah, definitely, and also too, which I thought was kind of cool. I'm forgetting the actor's name, but he was recently interviewed on Rebel Force Radio in the last few weeks. He's known as being the new C-3PO stand-in.
Okay.
And he does C-3PO appearances. He actually does a C-3PO voice. But he was also the guy in the suit of that that robot in that episode 6, the one with the heist and the prison and everything.
Oh, yeah. It was robot Zero? That
flew the ship. Zero, yes. Yeah. But he was also the guy in the first episode, the Gurindon Kuba's character with the long snout,
mm-hmm.
that would summon the speeders, and he did that little thing, you know. He was in that as well. So that was the same character. I'm forgetting his name. I'm sorry, but he's been doing this kind of stuff for a while, and he was really excited to be part of the Mandalorian and for two parts.
Yeah, and of course, then we also found out that Mark Hamill had a quote unquote guest appearance in the Mandalorian, providing the voice for a certain bartending droid.
Yeah, the EV-99 droid, otherwise known as the torture droid in Jabba's palace, another version of that droid that was the bartender in the now we allow droids cantina.
Oh, Mos Eisley, have the times have changed you?
Yes,
but you know what, Kevin? Now it's just depressing because now it's like, okay, we still have a few month wait before season 2 in October.
Before we get to this news, I just want to mention a couple other things. I've been diving, kind of re-energized my love for the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. We recently did on Couch Potato Theater the 30th anniversary of the original 1990 movie with Alex Autry and Lee Fillingsness, and that was a lot of fun. Because that movie still holds up, especially the costumes done by the Jen Henson Feature Shop. And I rewatched the three live-action films. I actually watched the original ones, and then I started watching the first one. Came out in 2012, that produced by Michael Bay. And then, obviously, I've been going in and watching the Nickelodeon series from 2012 that I got my daughter into. And we actually... through FaceTime, we watched a couple episodes of the first season, and I was like, you know what? I wonder if there's a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle podcast out there. And there's a few, but I was trying to find one. Like when I go into a podcast, I kind of see if they're up to date, Kyle.
Yeah.
Like if they've done one recently. I don't want to do one that started in 2012 and ended in 2017, you know?
Yeah.
And I found these guys called the Shellheads. It's the name of their podcast. And they've been doing it for about 3 years now. And they've been doing some recent ones and really enjoying their podcast. They cover the first three films and they cover stuff I haven't even seen or read. Like I never got into the 2003 series cartoon yet. I was kind of doing other stuff. That was when I was with Decipher and all that kind of stuff. And, but I do remember like the next mutation that went on for like two seasons, one with the female turtle, mm-hmm. the Venus de Milo. But they get like heavily into the comics, a lot of the stuff that I haven't been into and everything, but they also cover the Nickelodeon series, which I think is some of the best turtles out there. But anyway, if you're, you know, loving turtles and trying to do that, check it out. One other topic is, Kyle, I've been looking online to try to find decent prices for the original Turtle films on Laserdisc.
Mm-hmm.
And I recently bought a Laserdisc through eBay because it had a remote control. The two Laserdiscs that I currently own do not have remote controls. And I got it in the mail, but the tray was not coming out. And the guy said in the description that it was working. Of course, when I found it on my porch, it was the box was laid on its side, even though it said fragile and all that kind of stuff.
Ah.
And I told the guy, look, man, this thing is not opening up. And he showed me this he showed me this video that some people do, this trick where you turn the laser disc over and you kind of shake it a little bit and then you turn it back over and then you try it and it might work. It would not come out. And so the guy says, look, I insured the shipping through FedEx or whatever it is. Let me get my insurance paid out on it and then I'll pay you back. And I apologize for it. And I said, do you want me to send it back to you? And he's like, nah. But the cool thing was it came with a remote, and one of my other laser discs is a Pioneer that didn't have the remote, and it works with it. So now I've got a remote that works for it. But, you know, I've been searching for laser discs, and I want to get the original trilogy of the Turtles, and I see some on eBay, so I'm going to look at those. But I found some interesting ones, Kyle, ones that I've never seen of movies. Have you seen Full Eclipse with Mario Van Peebles? Came out in 1994.
Never heard of it.
Yeah, me neither. It has Patsy Kensit in it from Lethal Weapon 2 and Bruce Payne from Highlander Endgame, where there is a special type of cop to deal with a lot of the trouble happening in the streets, and they turn into werewolves.
Okay, then.
I also got Bulletproof, a Gary Busey film. Came out in 1987. You know what else came out in 1987?
Remind me.
Lethal Weapon.
This is true.
Do you remember who else was in Lethal Weapon?
That would be one Gary Busey.
He plays kind of like a cop on the edge, you know, who's bulletproof, or he gets shot, but he lives. And I haven't seen this one yet. I got The Osterman Weekend, which is a Sam Peckinpah film. I believe it was his last film before he passed away. Sam Peckinpah, known for the gritty, violent, 1969, 70s Wild Bunch.
Okay.
But also, interesting thing about this movie is that it's a Davis Panzer production. Do you know who that is?
Oh, well, yeah. If you were a Highlander fan, you definitely know who Davis Panzer is.
And one of my favorite sequels of all time, I've got American Ninja 2 on Laserdisc. I also got Predator 1 and Predator 2 on Laserdisc, nice. Which is very cool. I also got Quigley Down Under.
Good, very good movie.
Yes, and of course, Raw Deal, Arnold Schwarzenegger. But if there was one parody science fiction film that loved merchandise, what do you think it would be?
Hardware Wars.
No.
Damn. Wait. Spaceballs?
Spaceballs, the laser disc, and it actually says Spaceballs, the laser disc.
So... since we're talking Laserdisc, Kevin, that reminds me of something I watched the other day. The Sci-Fi Channel has a new show called The Great Debate.
The Great Debate?
Yes. And they have, like, they aired the first episode. It had Orlando Jones on it, Adam Savage from Mythbusters. I can't think of his name, but he used to be on with Chris Hardwick on The Nerdist. He does Mystery Science. Oh, Jonah Ray.
Jonah Ray, yeah, I know who he is.
And then also, it was a female actor, voice actress from Archer, who voices the main female lead in Archer.
The African American woman, right?
No, this was another woman.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, it was the four of them, and then the host. But what they're doing for the first episode was retro 80s.
Yeah.
And the first debate they had is, what 80s object would you bring back if you could? And Orlando Jones chose the brick cell phone.
The brick cell phone.
Jonah Ray, because I think they let him slide on this one. He chose a Zune.
The what?
The Zune. Remember the thing that was supposed to be an iPad killer or an iPod killer? Microsoft. No. Yeah, exactly.
No.
Adam Savage chose the Palm Pilot.
Okay, I remember that.
And really?
The Palm Pilot?
But the last pick was the Laserdisc.
Who said the Laserdisc?
The actress from Archer.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
But it was a fun little show, and with the retro stuff on it, you can find it on demand, Kevin, or go to sci-fi.com and you can watch it on there. Yeah, I think you'd enjoy at least that episode, so give it a check out.
Laserdisc is great. I love opening up the big two disc ones and all that art that's in there. And it's, you know, and you get that full letterbox. It's beautiful. I love it.
Well, with that, Kevin, we do have some very interesting things to talk about since we didn't think we were going to have anything to talk about.
I got something to say about that.
Oh, what's that?
Let's news.
Let's news.
So we're going to open up news. Kevin Saun, are you feeling a little wax on, wax off?
I'm feeling like sweeping some leg, buddy.
Yeah, because you're the best around and nothing's going to ever keep you down.
Get in a body bag!
Well, a few weeks ago, the news had started breaking that Cobra Kai was going to move from YouTube to a different streaming service. Now, I was
Hold on. Back up. Yeah. Why YouTube does not want Cobra Kai, or does Cobra Kai not want YouTube? What happened there?
There's some weird stuff going on with YouTube. I think there's a lot of original programming that's been on YouTube that's moving because they want to go to some place where they're a little more financially supported.
Is it because people don't want to pay for YouTube anymore?
I think
the pay version.
I think that's really the case because there's so many options out there right now for paywalls. I think YouTube is kind of getting lost in the shuffle. But yeah. Cobra Kai, like I said, it was announced a few weeks ago, maybe about a month ago, that it was moving from YouTube. Well, it has found a home, and I think it's the best home for it, Kevin. Cobra Kai is moving to Netflix.
Oh, so good. So when are we expected to see season 1 and 2 stream on Netflix?
We have not been given that information. But however, here's the interesting point. Season 1 and season 2 will be on Netflix, but they won't be exclusive to Netflix because of the contract still in place with YouTube for the first 2 seasons. But starting with season 3, Cobra Kai will be a Netflix exclusive. I am just thrilled about this because I think it definitely means we will get more than a 3rd season of Cobra Kai.
So that means season 1 and 2 are not going to start airing before season 3 does.
I wouldn't be surprised. I'm going to guess that they'll probably come out all at the same time, or maybe like the first two, a couple weeks before season 3 comes out as a primer. But I mean, Kevin, we have a huge love for Cobra Kai here at Culture Clash and the Fandom Podcast Network.
Yeah, we do.
I think this is great. Netflix is even talking about doing some possible spinoffs out of this.
Interesting. Very cool. Yeah, I'm excited about this. I have Netflix, and I just hope that Netflix isn't a one and done with the season 3 thing like they've done with other shows. I hope that they find that they can keep doing this.
I can't imagine Netflix is not putting the investment into this just to have one season.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think this is going to be good. I think production quality is going to go up a lot of things. This is great for Cobra Kai, and I cannot wait. Bring on season 3. You know what? Just sweep the leg, Johnny. Sweep the leg. So interesting piece of news that also has been breaking that I'm not quite sure.
Like everywhere,
but I don't know how much weight I can put in it. But could Michael Keaton be returning to the cape and the cowl, Kevin? That's the rumor.
Yeah.
So yeah.
I don't know why the rumor is that it's going to be attached to this movie.
Well, okay. So the rumor is that Michael Keaton will initially return to the as Bruce Wayne, possibly even donning the cape and the cowl again in the upcoming Flash movie, based off the TV series, but the actual DC universe with Ezra Miller Flash movie, which is based off the Flashpoint storyline. Now, those of you who are familiar with the comics know that the Flashpoint storyline was a huge storyline that actually in the comics led to the birth of the new 52 universe in the DC universe. But part of that storyline was the Flash went to an alternate reality where Bruce Wayne dies in the shooting, and it's Thomas Wayne, his father, who becomes Batman. Not quite the same Batman that we know. And a lot of people are thinking maybe that's the character that Michael Keaton might play Thomas Wayne. But the rumors are in this negotiation, he's looking to possibly sign on to do multiple films. And there's a lot of speculation that what could happen in Flashpoint could lead to Michael Keaton playing Bruce Wayne again in a different film based off the Batman Beyond universe.
Is it too much to ask? We got it. We were so close to getting it with Ben Affleck. I want a Dark Knight Frank Miller like live action movie based off that awesome, awesome graphic novel where he's old. And we got a little tease of that with, the Batman versus Superman with Batfleck, and which I really liked. I liked him as Batman, but I was kind of hoping that this would kind of go that direction instead.
I think
why is this not happened yet?
Because I think Frank Miller might be the holdup.
Does he hate money? I don't get it.
Frank Miller. I mean,
this is one of the most revered comic books of all time. And we can't get an old Batman Dark Knight. Ugh.
Well,
comes out of retirement. Ugh.
I think it's going to be a hard movie to do, and you have to find. I think Affleck was on the pace to maybe do that at some point, and I think with everything that's happened, and Warner Brothers still hasn't quite figured out what's going on with their movies yet. We've got the Snyder Cut coming on HBO Max.
They've been trying to figure it out for the last 10 years while the MCU has been cruising along just fine.
Yeah, exactly. Warner Brothers can't get.
Yeah, it wasn't. It was like MCU was like, hey, look, come on, DC, just. Be a little bit like us. Don't kind of mess up one movie or two really bad and maybe have one that's okay. Come on, follow us. You can do this.
Apparently they can't yet. So we will see what happens.
What do you think about this and this whole Flashpoint thing? It sounds interesting, by the way, with the Thomas Wayne idea. I did not know that. That sounds cool.
The idea is cool, and it's actually a good way that DC could reset their movie universe a little bit while keeping some of the same stars like Henry Cavill as Superman, Jason Momoa as Aquaman, Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman. The biggest issue here is actually Ezra Miller, Kevin. I don't know if there is a big push to get Ezra Miller out as Flash, and there's a very good reason for this. And a lot
did
of
he do something stupid?
He was at a convention and he literally hit a female fan.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
pushed her down on the ground, hit her. It was not good. And a lot of people have been screaming. I'm actually surprised he hasn't been removed from the role already.
Did you like him in Justice League?
I liked him, but I didn't like him as the version of the Flash they were trying to portray, because they were trying to portray the classic Barry Allen Flash.
Right.
But they made him more of a goofier kind of Wally West style Flash and really like what Barry Allen is. Barry Allen was a little bit older. He was a scientist. He worked in a crime lab, kind of what Grant Gustin does on the Flash TV show. That's more of what true Barry Allen probably is. And to me, they just made Ezra Miller too, like wide-eyed kid.
So why don't they get the TV guy?
That's what a lot of people are asking. But, this is Warner Brothers.
So is this Flash a go? It's happening?
That's still what they're saying. But this Flash movie has gone through like three different directors already. It's kind of a mess. So that's why I'm having a hard time putting a ton of credence into this story. But I think there's enough smoke there that I think there's something to it. Whether Ezra Miller continues as the Flash or they bring in somebody else, that's a whole other piece of news. But I would be up for seeing Michael Crane, because I really enjoyed him portraying Bruce Wayne in those films.
Yeah, me too.
So, and another interesting move, Hulu is just absorbing Fox product like it's going out of style. Obviously, the Orville has been moved to Hulu exclusively. And now two shows that were going to be on Fox's FX channel are being moved to Hulu. I think I understand the why in the case of both shows, but these two shows are the American Horror Stories anthology series, spinning off of the original American Horror Story series. Kind of probably going to be more like in the Twilight Zone vibe. It's going to be an anthology series, a different story each week.
That's what American Horror Story has always been.
American Horror Story has been a different story each season. The whole season is one story. Oh,
they're changing up, doing it episode by episode.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and the other is the long project that FX has been working on for a while, and that is based off the classic DC Vertigo graphic novel series Why the Last Man, which I am a huge fan of that series. A lot what of people. It tells the story of a young man named Yorick, and something happens, and him and his monkey Ampersand are the only two male people with any kind of animal, any kind of human, anything with the Y chromosome to survive. Every other
are they living in a world of women?
And basically, yeah, they are in a world of women.
Nice.
And needless to say, they're kind of a hot commodity.
You think?
but I think this is the move to Hulu is good for both of these series, because both of these series especially have some dark things that are a little bit more adult, and putting them behind a Hulu paywall, I think they can stretch their legs a little more, Kevin, and have a little more freedom to tell the actual story that they need to tell.
What is Fox trying to do? Like, give away all the good stuff?
No, Fox. Remember, Fox is owned by the mouse now.
Okay, what are they doing?
Well, they're taking all the good stuff off of free TV and putting it behind the Hulu paywall because I think they really want to grow Hulu out. I actually think this is actually a good thing for the Orville in the long run, possibly, too.
I hope so, yeah. Speaking of, real quick, if you're listening to this right now, please pay attention to a new episode of the Union Federation podcast that Kyle and I and, of course, Haley recorded just yesterday, and we talk about the Orville and how now's a good time to stream it. And we talk about the recent news of the Orville, my recent rewatch of it, and also we talk some new Star Trek news as well with Star Trek Strange New Worlds and a bunch of other cool stuff.
Yeah, by the time you get this podcast, it'll be about 3 or 4 days before that podcast comes out. Watch for it probably. We're recording this on Tuesday, June 23rd. A week from now, that new episode of Union Federation will come out. And like I said, we do a great dive about time out. A lot of news on the Orville, with especially season 3. So look forward to that. But you know what? Something that our good friend Jennifer actually brought up to us, Kevin, that I know you kind of said you were interested in this, is that on July 3rd, the Hamilton movie that Disney has cut and made from three different performances of Hamilton by the original cast is debuting on Disney Plus.
Just to clarify, they did the play, they filmed it, and now they're taking the parts that they filmed and putting it into a movie and releasing it on Disney Plus.
Correct. They filmed three different performances of it, all with the original cast, including Lin-Manuel Miranda, and they edited out the performances together into one movie that is going out on Disney Plus.
Never saw this on stage. It was like one of the biggest things. It still is. I have no idea what the plot is.
Yeah, I'm with you. I have an idea about it, but I never saw this.
All I know is this Lin-Manuel guy has been all over the place, including Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, no, he is highly talented. I will give him that. Hamilton was absolutely huge through 2016, 2017. It's still huge. You still have a hard time getting tickets to it. I'm going to check this out. I'm curious about this.
I know. I'm excited because I know this guy's talented and the show has got nothing but good reviews. I've known friends of mine that have seen it. They said it's great. So I'm excited.
Yeah,
I have no idea what it's about, but I'm excited.
Speaking of shows coming on streaming services, Kevin, this is one I've been waiting for a while. It got delayed because it was coming out on Netflix, and because of COVID, they had to – it took them longer to get the voice acting work done because this is an animated series. But a new Transformers series, War for Cybertron, is now set to debut on July 30th on Netflix. I am really excited about this because they have been redoing the Transformers toy line over about the last year or so, and they look so much more like the traditional Transformers that we saw on the original animated series. And I'm looking forward to checking this out. There's only one issue I have with the show, Kevin.
What's that?
Peter Cullen, due to contract situations, could not voice Optimus Prime for this show.
Yeesh.
That could be a death knell for this, but I'm willing to give it a shot because it's Transformers. It looks really good, really intense.
Jake Fauci, whoever he is, he's Optimus Prime.
Yeah, so, but this show's been getting a lot of hype. Hasbro's been fully behind it. They actually even have a line of toys for this series that are exclusive to Walmart that look very impressive. So I'm excited for this. I'm excited to see what's going to happen with it. I'm glad it's coming out July 30th. I wish it was a little sooner. It was supposed to come out actually the end of June here, but
looks like there's 14 episodes in season one.
I think. 14. Yeah. So
yeah,
looking forward to it. Looking forward to see what they're going to do. But Kevin, I think the biggest piece of news, which I saved for last because I want to give this proper time to talk about, was news that broke yesterday. Joel Schumacher passed away at the age of 80 due to cancer. Now, yeah. I think for the most part, most people will recognize Joel Schumacher. The average person will realize that's the guy who created bat nipples.
That created what?
The bat nipple.
Yes, unfortunately.
But if you go back, Joel Schumacher has been a very accomplished director in Hollywood. Kevin, I think if you were to go outside the Batman films, for me, the most famous movie he probably did was The Lost Boys.
Yeah, that's my favorite. Also, St. Elmo's Fire. I didn't realize he had done DC Cab, which I recently watched for the first time. But I would agree that my favorite is The Lost Boys, just an iconic film. He did Flatliners as well, Falling Down. And I will not apologize for this movie, but he did my favorite Schumacher Batman film, Batman Forever, of course. And then after Batman and Robin, he did 8mm, which I was not a fan of.
No, that was a weird movie.
Yeah, he did Tigerland. I wasn't a fan of Phone Booth either. He directed Phantom of the Opera in 2004, number 23. That was that dark Jim Carrey film.
Mm-hmm.
He did Trespass in 2011, not the one from the 90s.
No.
And it looks like his last directing stuff was a few episodes of House of Cards in 2013.
Yeah. So I think when we look back at the career of Joel Schumacher, it's a very interesting career. He definitely has contributed to movie history. I mean, The Lost Boys is great. Even going back, his first actual movie was The Incredible Shrinking Woman with Lily Tomlin in that. Flatliners has an interesting place. Dying Young, I remember when that came out, that was a Julia Roberts film that had an interesting place. I've always been a big fan of Falling Down.
Yeah, that's good. And he's written the stuff that he's directed, you know, which is cool, you know. And so he's done a lot more than just directing. You know, unfortunately, he's going to be known as the guy that really kind of hurt the Batman franchise. And personally, I think he did it with Batman and Robin, with George Clooney and Schwarzenegger. I don't see Batman Forever kind of really doing it. It's just Batman and Robin was just really bad.
You know, he started laying some seeds for Batman and Robin and Batman Forever, but I think it kind of fell in line. But I mean, Batman and Robin is one of the worst comic book films ever. George Clooney pluing out the Bat credit card.
Yeah.
The casting was not great. Arnold Schwarzenegger as Mr. Freeze, that was done for comedy's sake more than anything, and to have Schwarzenegger's name attached to it. You know, I think Schumacher is an interesting case in history too, because you look at how drastically he changed the look and the feel of the Batman franchise from Tim Burton.
Yeah, yeah. I think he was trying to make it a little more kind of comic, kind of like 1960s TV show Batman. It brings some of the camp back to it, but it kind of backfired.
Yeah,
I think he did a good job with Batman Forever, but he went a little too far with Batman and Robin.
I will say this. You could argue that Batman Forever soundtrack is better than Batman 89 soundtrack that Prince did.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree with that.
So, well, with that, Kevin, we have seen a few things. So once again, it's time to
buy it. We have.
Yes, we have. I'm going to stream it, or maybe I'll unsee it.
So, Kevin, I wanted to talk first and foremost about the latest addition to the DC TV universe, kind of CW thing, but this show's got a little bit of a different place in it compared to all the other shows, and that is Stargirl. Now, what's interesting about the show is it actually airs first on the DC Universe app on Monday nights, strictly through the app, and then it airs on regular television Tuesday nights on the CW network. But I have been very surprised by this show. It's based off a character written by comic creator Jeff Johns, who was famous for bringing back the Justice Society of America to the DC Universe many years ago. And
difference between that and Justice League?
The Justice Society of America was a group of older heroes that originally in the DC Universe, they all kind of operated during like World War II or an older time. You like the original Flash, Jay Garrick, the original Green Lantern, Alan Scott. You had characters by the name of Dr. Midnight. And one of the big characters was Starman. Now, in the 90s, Starman kind of got a modern recreation that became incredibly popular. And it led to kind of bringing back all these JSA characters, which then Jeff Johns took into full force. And actually, JSA was one of DC's top selling comics for a good run while Jeff Johns was writing it. And during that time, he created the character Stargirl, a character by the name of Courtney Whitmore, who was actually based off of his sister who had committed suicide. So basically taking his best memories of her. And in this case, the character became extremely popular and has led into joining a live-action Stargirl show, which has a really interesting cast in it. Luke Wilson is in this show. Amy Smart is in this show. And it's been a lot of fun, and it's been a great almost I love you to everything about the Justice Society of America and how they're handling it. It's about 5 episodes in now, and it's just been, it's been a lot of fun. It might not be your hardcore superhero cup of tea, but if you are a fan of the DC Universe and a fan of the Justice Society, you need to be watching this show. It's lighthearted. I think it's a great character for a lot of young girls to be looking up to as well.
Give me the background of Stargirl. What's her powers? What's her deal?
Okay, so Stargirl's character is a young woman by the name of Courtney Whitmore. And she ends up with what they call the cosmic, in the show they call it the cosmic staff. It can be called the cosmic rod in the comics as well, which grants a holder of it certain powers, the ability to fly, shoot some energy bolts. There's some more things with it. And the original character who carried this was Starman. She found the rod. It accepted her. She started calling herself Stargirl as a teenager. Her quote unquote stepfather, adoptive father in the comics, was a character named Pat Dugan, who was kind of a classic 60s sidekick to a lot of these heroes, but he was also very mechanically inclined. He actually built himself a battle robot, which he called Stripes. And so you get the Stargirl and Stripes. They were initially shown in a DC Comics miniseries called Stars and Stripes. So it kind of just developed from there. Luke Wilson, who plays the character, is absolutely phenomenal in this series.
Right.
He's great in it. It's definitely worth a check out. Definitely stream this show. Check it out. I'm thoroughly enjoying it. And it's, you know what? It's lighthearted. It's fun. It's a great break from a lot of things that are going on right now.
I was looking into the actress, Breck Marie Basinger, no relation to the other famous Basinger.
Correct.
She grew up in a small town in Texas. Then she went for acting when she was 13. Did stuff like cheerleading, volleyball, and she did beauty pageants. She was crowned 2009's World's Our Little Miss. Her acting career started with a reoccurring role in Nickelodeon's Haunted Hathaways. After she graduated high school, she continued to expand her education. But this is really cool. Being a type 1 diabetic, she's become a huge advocate for diabetes research and is the national ambassador for JDRF and is now taking on the leading role of Stargirl.
Yeah, she also graduated from high school at 16.
Yeah, it's good.
So she's a very impressive young woman. Like I said, this is the kind of person I would, if I had a daughter, I would love to see my daughter see as a role model.
It's very cool.
So, but you've watched a couple interesting things yourself, Mr. Reitzel.
Yeah. So, you know, we had a segment last week on the last episode of Culture Clash where we were the Magic 8-Ball, and we were touching on actors and actresses that didn't quite make it big when we thought that they would. They had certain potential. They kind of peaked at a certain time, but then they kind of, well, went back down and didn't really do anything. And one of those actors was Shane West. And one of the movies that he was in, I was very, very curious about. He did a biopic pick in 2008 called, well, 2007, but I think it was released in 2008, called What We Do Is Secret. Are you familiar with the band The Germs?
I've heard of it, but I'm not real familiar with their story.
Well, The Germs were they were an L.A. punk band in the late 70s, headed by Darby Crash, who was one of these punk front guys who, you know, would cut himself and, you know, do shock value and all that kind of stuff. And one of his bandmates was Pat Smear. Does that name ring a bell?
That name rings a bell, but refresh my memory.
He was part of the original lineup of the Foo Fighters with Dave Grohl. And they've been friends for the longest time, especially during the punk days. Then he kind of left the band for a while, and then he came back. But he was one of the original members of the Germs. And the Germs kind of had other people kind of in and out. Lead singer of the Go-Go's. Oh, gosh, what's her name? She was part of this scene as well. Oh God, what's her name? Anyway, Penelope Spheeris. Do you know who she is?
Again, names ring. These are names ringing a bell, but
director. I think she directed. Was it Clueless? Was it Fast Times at Richmond High? Maybe in Clueless. But anyway, she also did a documentary called Decline of the Western Civilization, which which the first one was about the punk movement, and then the second one was about the metal movement. And there's a famous scene where she interviews Darby Crash in his house or whatever, and also took some video. He got into drugs, and he died by drug suicide. And his death, he was very influential, a lot of fans. His death was overshadowed because he died the day after, or was it the day of, when John Lennon was killed.
Oh, okay.
And Darby Crash was only 22 years old. And the movie's kind of low budget, you could tell. Shane West does a great job of the character. When I look at the old videos of Darby Crash and the pictures, he did a great job portraying him. My only issue with the film was some of the co-stars had some really bad wigs. other than that, though, I was always curious about the germs, and I heard about Darby Crash, and I was kind of curious about it. And Bijou Phillips is also in this.
I was going to say, this has got a very interesting cast in it. Obviously, Shane West, who we talked about last week, but Pat Smear is played by Rick Gonzalez, who was a regular on Arrow, playing the character of Wild Dog. You mentioned Bijou Phillips. Tina Marino, who
Majorino,
yeah, who played Mac Veronica on Veronica Mars,
yep,
was also in this, and Ray Park is in this film.
Yes, Ray Park, that caught me by surprise because he had like his wig on, and he played like I think like a club promoter, if I remember correctly. And I'm like, wait a minute, that's Ray Park, because Ray Park has a very distinctive voice. But I really enjoyed it. I thought it was good.
Yeah, and Guns Akimbo, Kevin.
Guns Akimbo, yes. I took a chance on this film. I got it on sale at Target. It came with a digital copy as well. Stars Daniel Radcliffe and Samara Weaving and Mark Rowley. And it's about this guy who is this kind of nerdy guy. He works for this game company doing like the boring stuff, you know, like play testing and programming and stuff like that. And but there's this underground game called what's it called? Drawing a blank on it right now. Schism. And basically they pit these people to battle to the death. And people follow along online, and drones follow these people as they try to kill each other in real life. And He gets pulled into this because he trolls the wrong people online. This is what happens when you troll the wrong people online and they know more about computers than you do. They find him, these Schism people that are behind the scenes, and they attach and bolt these guns to his hand and force him to play in this life or death, life and death game. And it's very entertaining. Samara Weaving, she's cast in the new G.I. Joe Snake Eyes movie. I think she's playing Scarlet, or she playing is either Scarlet or Baroness. I can't remember.
One of those. She's also Hugo Weaving's niece.
Yes, 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 yes. Thank you. Rhys Darby is in it. He's very funny. He has a small part in it. Interesting thing about this, it's filmed mostly in New Zealand, Auckland, New Zealand. And there's some cityscape stuff that happened too. That's also filmed in Kansas City, by the way. But it's very stylistic violence, very entertaining. There's a couple funny scenes where while he has these guns bolted to his hands, he tries to go to the bathroom, and it's very funny and stuff. And Samara Weaving plays like one of the very good characters that's good at killing, called Nix, N-I-X, and she's after him, and she's, you know, she's one of the celebrity participants during this whole thing. Very entertaining. I do recommend it. Definitely it's worth a stream whenever it comes out. Violence, rated R for violence and language, and it's I found it very entertaining.
Yeah, I was looking through the cast too. There's actually another person who I'm a fan of in this, and that is Grant Bowler, who was the lead on the Sci-Fi Channel show Defiance.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. By the way, it's directed by Jason Leigh Howden, and he comes like I'm seeing a trend of this, Kyle. We've seen the stunt guys turn to directors, but now we're seeing visual effects guys turn to directors. And he's done visual effects for the Avengers, Planet of the Apes, Wolverine, one of the Wolverine movies. He also directed Deathgasm, a horror film. Yeah, I like this guy's shooting style. Some of it kind of reminds me a little bit of John Wickie a little bit, which is why I liked it. But I like the overall look of it and the characters in this film. I recommend it.
Yeah. I want to ask you something before we move on, too, because I was hesitant to put him on the list. The Ace Ball acted kind of weird when his name came up, though. Daniel Radcliffe.
Yes.
He's had a career. He's done a lot of things, but has he reached the heights that we thought he was going to hit after Harry Potter?
Most people would probably say no.
But I don't think he's had a bad enough career that he would have fallen on that list we had from the 8-Ball last week. But it's just, he's kind of a quandary to me on this.
Yeah, I mean, he did that really weird film called Swiss Army Man. He was Victor Frankenstein. Yeah, he did that movie called Horns, Woman in Black. I gotta say, he's taken some weird roles. God, yeah, I'm looking at his stuff here. He's in this TV series right now called Miracle Worker, which I have not seen him in. Yeah, you know, he could become, I mean, he was huge, of course, being part of the Harry Potter world. But you know, he's kind of coming down again. He's very entertaining in this. He's very funny, actually. And I got to give him credit for that, because being funny is tough.
Yeah. Now, but I got to ask you this with him, and I think this is part of it. He was set for life before he was even 16 years old.
Yeah. Yeah. Rich wise. Yeah.
So he can basically just take roles that he might find off the wall or interesting to him, and doesn't really need to necessarily take on another franchise too.
This is very true. If he's smart with his money, which I hope he is, he doesn't have to worry about money ever again. And he still probably gets royalties and stuff, I'm guessing, but he can pick and choose. It would be nice though, if he was part of another franchise or something that could kind of, bring him out of the shadow of Harry Potter and, you know, find a wider audience.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's very charming and likable in this Guns Akimbo movie. He's actually one of the highlights here, and he's very, very funny. Real quick, just an update. I just want to mention to people, I am fully invested into Queen of the South TV series. We talked about it last time. I found out some information. So seasons 1 through 4 are now streaming on Netflix. The last season, season 5, is going to be premiering on USA. And apparently it was canceled after season 4, but then it came back due to popularity with fans. And so this will be its last season. And I am fully invested into this. This show is so good.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely going to hop back on that train as well. But we're going to take a quick break, and I found a little something fun, a little something different, and I think it's going to be a fun conversation. But first, here is what else is going on around the Fandom Podcast Network. I'll get that right someday. Anyway, here we go.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. We'd like to continue to feed your ears by inviting you to listen to our other awesome shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. It starts with our flagship show, Culture Clash, our weekly pop culture podcast. Couch Potato Theater, our podcast celebrating our favorite movies. Time Warp, the Fandom Flashback podcast discussing a whole year in movies. The End Zone, our NFL podcast. Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast. The Union Federation, our Star Trek and Orville podcast. Hair Metal, the 1980s rock metal podcast. Type 40, our Doctor Who podcast. Lethal Mullet, a 1980s action film podcast. What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast. And our newest show, Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast. A deep dive into the final frontier with host Mark Newbold and Adam P. O'Brien. You can enjoy all of these great Fandom Podcast Network shows on our master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. The FPNet can also be found on the Podbean app. The Fandom Podcast Network is also on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and now iHeartRadio. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook. You can also email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. You can also find the Fandom Podcast Network on Instagram and Twitter. Thank you for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.
Well, hopefully you're enjoying the podcast we're doing to help feed your ears and giving you a break from what's going on around the world. But Kevin, when I was doing, you know, we have all of our segments, but I just found this story on one of the sources I go to a lot for a lot of news, 411 Mania. And I found this, they do some little fun articles here and there. I found this one kind of fun. The top five 1980s movies that should have had action figures. And with, of course, they inspired this by leading off with a commercial for the old Rambo toy line.
Right.
One of the first R-rated movies to actually ever have a toy line, an actual line in the 80s. But it brought up...
But it was based off the kid-friendly cartoon, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, but they threw out some stuff, including some honorable mentions. Megaforce, mm-hmm. Big Trouble in Little China, mm. Warriors of the Wasteland, which I've never heard of.
Never heard of it.
Escape from New York, Cobra, and the Terminator were all in their honorable mentions. And then...
If I could, I'd love to get a Marion Cobretti with that 1950s car, 1950 Mercury he had.
Yeah, but here are their top five Flash Gordon movie toys based solely off the movie. I think if that movie hadn't bombed, it probably would have happened.
Right. Yep.
The old Tim Thomerson Trancers franchise.
I don't know about this.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that either.
Yeah, I don't know about that one.
But Kevin, you would have been first in line pre-ordering this online. Number coming in at number three, American Ninja. Kevin would have finally gotten his Michael Dudikoff action figure.
Dude, give me my Steve James action figure, man. That's what I would want. But gosh, can you imagine that? Oh, that would have been awesome. American Ninja figures.
Yeah. Number two, Predator. Obviously, we've had some Predator toys later on, but yeah, at the time.
Yeah, with the nostalgia, you get that. Yeah. But yeah, they did not. Yeah.
And at number one, a movie I have never heard of, Warrior of the Lost World. But the cover looks kind of cool.
Peter Ginty, Paris Combata. Oh, you know who Paris Combata is?
Oh, yes. I know who she is. Star Trek.
She's the Megaforce. Blonde girl from Star Trek Motion Picture and also Megaforce.
Also a former Miss Universe.
Yeah. Died way too young, by the way.
Yeah. Had cancer, I believe.
Oh, and
Donald Fred the Hammer Williamson. Of course, as a Chiefs fan, I know exactly who the Hammer is.
Donald Pleasance in this, too. What? Huh? Yeah, I never heard of that.
I might have to go find this for a CPT.
I know, right?
So, but this inspired me, Kevin. So I came up with a little list of my own. And after thinking about it, I do want to throw in one honorable mention. The Wraith should have had toys.
Oh, God. Yeah, especially that car, at least.
Yeah.
Oh, man. And that, and then when the Wraith guy, of course, played by Charlie Sheen, when he's dressed up, looks badass.
Yeah. So I would love to see that one. I'm going to cheat, though, with my kind of number.
Hold on. Who's the girl in the Wraith?
Oh, Sherilyn Fenn.
Oh, yeah. I need a Sherilyn Fenn figure. Sorry.
You want a Sherilyn Fenn figure to go along with your Kelly Kapowski doll?
Yeah, I do.
So anyway, I came up with my list, Kevin. Did you at least brainstorm some ideas for this?
No, because I just saw the notes.
Okay, well, I'll give my list because I think we would match on my number one anyway. Okay. So that'll give you a chance to think about it, maybe get some ideas. But I am going to cheat with my number five, Kevin, because I'm actually going to pull it from a TV miniseries, which was but it just was so amazing and it should have had a toy line, and that is V.
Why'd you say cheating here? That you shouldn't be cheating on that one. That's a good one.
Yeah, but I mean, I was trying to stick with the 80s movies theme, but it was a miniseries.
Oh, I see.
So, but I mean, come on, who wouldn't have wanted the blaster or action figures and the
weird
ships?
Baby? Yeah, totally, man.
Yeah, you know, the original
dude,
version.
Dude, I know. Beastmaster.
Yeah, Beastmaster would have been good, too. That was actually one of my thoughts for honorable mentions.
Yeah, Beastmaster.
I'm going to take one from that list because I think Predator Toys, we needed a Dutch figure. We needed Jesse the Body Ventura. All those, you could have had that whole team in a Predator figure. It would have been awesome. But number three for me, Kevin, you got to get a little Chuck Norris in this.
Okay, if you're going to go Chuck Norris, go ahead.
I'm choosing the Delta Force. And you know why I'm choosing the Delta Force?
Why?
Because you can still get a Steve James figure and a Lee Majors figure out of it. Plus, they had those great motorcycles and the little Dune, G.I. Joe-esque type dune buggies in that film.
True, true. I personally would have gone with Invasion USA.
Oh, no, I agree. That's a good one. But my thinking was, is I still get a Steve James figure out of that. So, it's, you true. Know.
Yes. Yeah.
Number two, Kevin Kroll. Who wouldn't have wanted a Glaive figure? Glaive sure. action toy.
God, I know. With the platinum, it could fold out. Oh, yeah. Man. Why isn't that a thing?
But there were so many cool-looking characters. You had the Slayers, who were very cool. You had the Cyclops. You had the Changeling. So you could have included his figure with a couple different animals. The play set of the Monster's Palace.
Yeah, I mean,
there were a lot of cool things you could have picked from Kroll.
How about Labyrinth? You know, was that?
No, not that really. Labyrinth, Dark Crystal, that really didn't have any toys themselves. I'm going to save number one, Kevin, because I think it would be number one on your list, and I want to confirm that too. But I want to know if you brainstormed any ideas while I was talking about mine.
Gosh, I just kind of blurted some out now. Why not Lethal Weapon? You know? You could have done that. That would have been kind of a fun series. Gosh, what else? Commando, dude. Come on. Commando. John Matrix toy, especially, you know, like when he suits up on the beach and he's getting ready to storm the island, you know, that would be
really cool. Does he come with a saw blade throwing action?
Totally. And you can have like a Sully figure where you can hang by his legs and say that he lied and dropped him to his death, you know. Little Alyssa Milano figure too. Anyway, but I love your number one pick. It would probably be mine too, dude.
Come on. My number one is Megaforce. I mean, now they did some Hot Wheels for Megaforce.
Yes,
but they never some proper toys. I think basically Megaforce was what a lot of G.I. Joe stuff turned into later. But
oh God, yeah. Can you imagine same size figures? Have an Ace figure, a Dallas figure, have those, obviously, the cool dune buggies and motorcycles. And then that one other one that was kind of like the control center.
The mobile command center. I always liked that vehicle.
And then you could have like a tank with, who's the bad guy's name?
I'm blanking on it.
Forgetting his name, but yeah, that would be. But you have to have like a special motorcycle with Ace, the one that has the wings, though.
Well,
you have a special Ace bike.
Maybe you use a little bit of the old G.I. Joe Zartan technology. So, because remember at night, the paint jobs would disappear. So when you get them in the dark and then the paint kind of fades out, then you get them in the light and it brings the paint back.
Right. That would be cool. Yeah.
And come on, you've got to have the resupply station play set with the two guys who were the heroes of the past five missions.
Nice. Yeah, no, totally, dude. That would be really, really cool. Or like, you know, that secret base playset, maybe. That would be kind of fun.
You know? Well, or, come on, you got to have the truck with the holographic projector.
Oh, totally.
You know, maybe it would be like an old Viewmaster disc that it would like project onto a screen or something you could put into it.
Yeah. God, there's, man, if I had more time to think about this, there's some good stuff on there. I think that would be a lot of fun. You know,
well, I'm going to throw out one TV toy too. We should have had a Street Hawk action figure.
Yeah. You know, I mean, something that these shows, they could have really, if you had stuff to help push the shows might have lasted longer. Like personally, I would have loved a sledgehammer 44 caliber gun. That would have been really cool.
Yeah, that would have been very cool. But yeah, no, I just thought this was a little something fun, something a little different, you know. And of course, you know, the baby from V was probably the early inspiration for the child that's hanging behind you, Kevin.
This is very true. The inspiration for the child, or otherwise known as Baby Yoda. Right, we could have had a little plush baby V, yeah.
Kevin, I just, you know, another one. When we have killed for a Gunstar.
Oh, last Starfighter, dude. Yeah. Why didn't they come out with a real game at the time?
That was one of the biggest mismarketing ideas ever.
One of the biggest blunders of all time, not actually have a Last Starfighter video game. How do you not have that? How do you not have the Gunstar? I don't get it.
You know, have a Gunstar maybe about the size of a Millennium Falcon?
Yeah, totally, man. I mean, what the hell? Oh, hate money. They hate money.
Yes, so. Well, with that, we're going to wrap up this week's, what was supposed to be an off-week show, but.
Nope, sorry.
But we got something very fun planned for next week, Kevin. Let's just say that the Hall of Fame is going to get reopened for a special page. I think something that's going to be fun, because it's going to be July 4th weekend when that episode comes out. And I think we have, I don't want to give it away, but we got something fun planned. I think we're going to come up with some interesting things and nominations. Tease it.
Why not? Okay.
Well, tease away then, sir.
All right. Famous duos slash partners.
And this is going to be nominations. How many? Okay, Kevin, I'm going to ask you, how many do you want to do?
Well, seven can make it in, obviously. Yeah, I think that's fine.
Yeah, seven can make it in.
We'll start with seven, and we'll do some research on it and see where that leads us, because we have to cover the movies and TV series as well, of course. And famous duos and partners. There's a lot to dive into there. So,
but keep that in mind. I think Kevin and I can probably talk you into throwing something out on social media. Maybe we can get some nominations.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to do something. I want to do a little research on it. So,
but with that, we're going to get out of here. As the wise prophet said, be excellent to each other and enjoy your fandom.